this, I guess. Okay. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this Tuesday, the 3rd of July. I would ask the audience to join the board as we honor our nation with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Great. I hope that all of you are looking forward to a wonderful 4th of July and have great plans. It's always, another time of the year that, we're eager and proud to say that we live in the land of the free and the home of the brave. Being an American brings a lot of pride and joy. But one of the things, it allows individuals the right to dissent and to voice their concern to governing authorities. So there's never a dull moment in government. And as many of you that are here today on behalf of the board, I want to welcome you. I would imagine there is an item or two on the agenda that is of interest to some of you, and we certainly want to provide an opportunity for you to comment. Board, a request has been brought to my attention that I would need consideration for as we look at the agenda today and some of the topics. Under other reports, we have two individuals here from the Iowa Sports Foundation and a person for the Iowa Drainage District Association, John Tolbert, and the request was whether we could move them up a little bit on the agenda so that they wouldn't necessarily have to be here for the bulk of that. Mr. Toot, do you have a preference as to where you think this might be a good place to fill them in, if we so desire?
Well, I think the most logical place for me would be after the public hearing items, which there aren't any.
So before the first, between 8 and 9, what do you think, Mr. Spanner?
Works for me.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay, between 8 and 9, we will make the... Okay, with that, I will use that as consensus that we will try to make that adjustment and move those up between 8 and 9. Great. Okay. The consideration of the minutes of 6-26-12 is the next item.
Move approval. Second.
It's been moved and second, the approval of the minutes. Are there any comments or corrections? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Minutes are approved. Item number four is a public comment. This is a comment period in which the public can address the board regarding a topic on today's agenda. And obviously under one of the areas, I believe there will be an opportunity where the board will address the confinement discussion regarding the conservation resolution, etc. So I do see that there are several names here with that topic. If you want to defer and speak at that time, we can so do that at that time. If there are others that would wish to speak on another item on the agenda, please come forward at this time, and the board would like to hear your concerns. Okay, all righty. So then with that, we will move to item five, is a consideration of personnel action. There were a few other personnel actions that were added from the time that it first came out, so hopefully that will be okay.
Move approval with the noted changes.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and second, the approval of the personnel action with an additional insertion. Hearing no further comment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Personnel action are approved. Item six is consideration of claims. Again, board, your preference.
Move approval of the claims list.
Second.
Been moved and second, the approval of the claims. Are there any comments regarding any? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Claims are approved. Okay, and then we come to the consent agenda. Board, I just want to call your attention to one request. As you know, the consent agenda is something that generally requires no discussion unless there's a request to pull something. We did have a couple manure management requests on the consent agenda from out of county, items number 7 and 8 and 6, and I did ask our environmental health person the question regarding whether or not we had any knowledge of where the manure is being spread was near any impaired bodies of water. And according to this, we don't have any maps that actually show this plan. This is something that, if you so desire, could be pulled for discussion. But I just wanted to know that I was concerned about how this may factor in based upon some of our previous meetings. So if there are no concerns regarding...
I mean, these aren't new plans, right?
No. These are not new plans. This is just the fact that they are a small portion of land in Story County will be used to spread some manure, and these are located in other counties. Okay. Okay. So with that, then I will ask your pleasure regarding the consent agenda.
Move approval of the consent agenda.
Second.
It's been moved and second the approval of the consent agenda. This is the roll call. Toot.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton. Aye. Consent agenda is adopted. Okay. All right. And then there were no public hearing items this week. And so at this time, hopefully these individuals are here and ready to go. I'm going to welcome to the desk area here for the Iowa Sports Foundation, Mr. Clarence Hudson. Welcome, Clarence.
Clarence, right up here.
Right up here. I know.
We're glad you're here.
Well, thank you.
Sit or stand?
Sit. Yes. Please. Make yourself comfortable.
Make yourself comfortable.
Thank you. I take it I have the floor.
You have
the floor. I'm being looked at here. Well, good. Just first thing I want to say is I want to thank the Story County Board of Supervisors for their many years of supporting the Iowa Games. And, of course, I'm Clarence Hudson. I'm the Executive Director of the Iowa Sports Foundation. The Iowa Sports Foundation operates the Iowa Games. We operate Live Healthy Iowa, Live Healthy Iowa Kids, and we also operate a new program called Adaptive Sports Iowa. Our new program, Adaptive Sports Iowa, is for the physically impaired. And it's those individuals who were born with a spina bifida or some type of accident in their lifetime, car wreck, bicycle accident, where they've been paralyzed. When we take those individuals and give them the opportunity to get involved with some type of activity. Our logo is igniting the competitive spirit of Iowans for sports, recreation, and health. And from the support that we receive from the supervisors, we're able to do that not only in Ames and Story County, but throughout the state of Iowa. We are an Iowa organization. And one of the things that we are proud ourselves in is that this year we will reach out and affect an Iowan, about 290,000 Iowans this year. Our goal, our 5-year goal is 500,000 Iowans. Our 10-year goal is 1 million Iowans. We want to reach out and touch those Iowans, and we also want to make Iowa the healthiest state in the nation. We're striving to do that, and by coming to Ames and by being in Story County, it's a tradition. We've been here for 26 years. One of the things that we love about Ames is that the people of Story County and the people of Ames welcome us. We get tremendous amount of volunteers. We get tremendous amount of help. It's such a privilege to be here because they welcome us to town. They're coming right now, this week. They're starting 7th and 8th. When we first started the Iowa Games back in 1987, that was one weekend. We had about 7,000 athletes involved. Right now, we'll run 4 weekends here in Ames. We'll have over 15,000 athletes coming to town. They'll be in the restaurants. They'll be in the hotels. They'll be in the stores. They'll be at the mall. They'll be all over the place. They'll be excited about being here. And because of the way the people of Story County treat them, they'll be exciting when they leave. So this year, we've got 21 different events that we support that we run through the Iowa Sports Foundation, and it is a marvelous thing. Our mud run was over 1,800. We've got four new events in the Iowa Games this year. We've got 58 different sports this year in Iowa Games. One new sport we have is rugby. Another new sport we have is pickleball. You didn't play pickleball when you were a kid, did you? Well, let me tell you something. I didn't either. But what pickleball is it's tennis with a small net, wooden paddles, and wiffle ball in a small court. And I think it's played mostly in doubles, but I'm not real sure. We also have a gravel grinder race, which that's going to start this weekend at Sheeman Building. It goes. And they ride it completely on gravel. It goes out into the country, goes up through Story City, comes back around, and it ends up, it's a 65-mile ride. It's called a gravel grinder. We're looking for 100, 200 people to ride in that ride. So there are a lot of things that we're doing. We couldn't do it without you. We really appreciate the Story County Board of Supervisors and their support. We appreciate the people of Story County and the people of Ames who support us. And if there's any questions or anything else you'd like for me to say, I will.
Well, Clarence, obviously you've taken over the leadership of this body is certainly welcome. You bring a certain passion and enthusiasm for sports. We've had the pleasure working with Jim Hallahan for many years, and when Jim told us, I was there the night that we ushered him out and ushered you in into this leadership, and so we're happy that you're here to officially introduce yourself to the rest of the board and to the community in general. I'm sure over the years we'll see a lot of you and all of the people connected with the organization of the Iowa Games. It truly has been one of the stable events each year that does impact the quality of life, the health and welfare of all. And it's amazing to look at people of all ages, even seniors far further along than me, that are out there engaged in some type of competitive activity. And it makes me ashamed a little bit that I'm not willing to take that challenge, but I'm kind of taking it easy.
We had a 76-year-old in the office signing up for track and field this morning, so. So you know.
I didn't know there were many that were a lot further along.
You know how that goes. Thank you so much. And is that a plaque? You bet. Okay, you can bring that up, okay? If I realized we were going to get this, I would have had a picture. Okay. This is a plaque that says, we'll do that. This plaque says, the Iowa Games recognized Story County Board of Supervisors as a 2011 Gold Friend of the Games. Your contribution helps provide Iowans with a wholesome avenue of positive developments through sports and physical activity. Board members, join us in Clarence as we I dressed up just for you. Okay, and next is a presentation from the Iowa Drainage District Association, John Tolbert. John, welcome to Story County.
I had contacted John here, I don't know, a month or so ago. Since I've been here, we receive an invoice annually from the Iowa Drainage District Association. It was my understanding that from anybody's recollection, Story County has never belonged to the association. So I thought I'd see if Mr. Tolbert would come down and give us a presentation and see if this is something that we need to look into a little bit further. So thanks for coming.
Great. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. It is a pleasure to be in Story County and talk about drainage issues of all things. I don't bring a plaque, unfortunately. I can't thank you for your support because you haven't supported us in the past, but we hope we can change that around, and we hope that we can bring you all into the fold in terms of membership in the Iowa Drainage District Association. I know that I have come in past years and talked with previous members of your board about possible participation, and obviously the reception I got and the decision that was made was they wanted to pursue other interests and not participate. So we hope that you all can see the error of your way, the error of your ways in the past, and find a way to participate in IDDA. The best way I can describe IDDA, I know you all are active in ISAC. We're sort of a miniature ISAC, but we're very specifically focused on one issue, and that is drainage and drainage rights in the state of Iowa. Interestingly, IDDA grew out of ISAC back in the 1980s. And in a past life, I served as executive director of ISAC from 1988 to 1987. And I had a group of county supervisors approach me at that time that were concerned that they didn't feel that drainage really had any home anywhere in the state of Iowa in terms of advocacy. And we created a drainage committee in ISAC at that time, and I was very surprised, frankly, to find out how much interest there was in it. I was a city boy from St. Louis, attended Drake University, and I didn't know much about drainage. And, you know, I had a couple of county supervisors come in and say, create a committee. I said, okay, we'll create a committee. No big deal. But I found out very quickly that in those counties that have organized drainage districts, and basically in Iowa you're talking sort of the northwest quadrant of the state, we have a few organized districts down in southeast Iowa, down by Burlington, which are Mississippi River districts, which are organized under a separate section of the law and deal with separate statutes, but they also participate. But basically, it's the counties in what we call the Des Moines Lobe, basically from Polk County, north to the Minnesota border, and west to the Nebraska border. We have 26 counties that participate in the organization right now. We'd like to have a few more, obviously. And what we deal with is the issue of drainage, and we deal with that in a lot of different ways. We are active in the legislative process, obviously. I did bring a copy of our legislative newsletter where we wrapped up what happened in the 2012 session. We have an annual meeting each December, which is normally held in Fort Dodge. I brought an agenda from the meeting for last year so you could see the kinds of things that we talk about. And we are also active in the legal area, where we take a look at issues that potentially have an impact, a negative impact on drainage, and we get involved in those issues. And I'll give you an example of that. Where we recently had a success. We were approached, the IDDA board was approached back 3 years ago by the Calhoun County Board of Supervisors, who are active in IDDA, and they had been in a dispute with a railroad over who has the responsibility to pay for the cost of repairing drainage structures that need repair in railroad right-of-way. And what had happened is there had been a drainage structure that had collapsed. The railroad went to the county and asked the county to make the repair, and the county politely declined and stated that, I'm sorry, the Iowa Code says that that is in railroad right-of-way and that's a railroad responsibility, and we're not going to do it. That's your cost, that's your responsibility. So what happened at that point is the railroad effected the repair and then came back and billed the county for $15,000. For the cost of the repair. The county declined to pay the bill for the reason I cited, and the railroad sued them, basically asking the court to compel payment. That case went to district court in Rockwell City, where the County Board of Supervisors prevailed. It then was appealed by the railroad to the Iowa Supreme Court, and in this case, the Iowa Court of Appeals got the case first. They also heard arguments in the case and again sided with the county, at which point the railroad appealed the case to the Iowa Supreme Court, which heard arguments in the case last September. IDDA's involvement in the case is we have, in addition to our normal membership, we have what is called the Mutual Protection Fund, which is basically a litigation fund, which is a voluntary fund that counties pay into, that counties can pay into and drainage districts can pay into. And we use that fund to help fill, to help pay for legal costs. So we provided money to Calhoun County to help defray the expenses of their district in this litigation. We also provided funds to hire an attorney to file a friend of the court brief on behalf of Calhoun County before the Iowa Supreme Court. The case has a happy ending. The Iowa Supreme Court issued a ruling last Friday, 4 days ago, in support of Calhoun County, and basically said that the Calhoun County Board of Supervisors acted properly and that there was no basis to force the board to pay for those repairs, that it properly was a railroad responsibility. I don't know that the case would have been any different without IDDA involvement, but I know that we were very active in it. We kept the pressure on the courts, and obviously with the funding we provided to Calhoun County and to hire an attorney to file a friend of the court brief, that is something that we felt assisted in their success. The other thing I think that I should say about IDDA is I've been with the association 10 years now, and I think that when I took over drainage, particularly in the environmental community, had a very, very bad connotation. And the organization itself was viewed as very anti-environment in terms of drainage and drainage rights, and I hope we've changed that. We recognize that drainage has a role to play, and we have to have to encourage environmental stewardship and proper use of the land. We have been very active in the CREP program at the state level, which builds wetlands for the purpose of intercepting nitrate before it gets into the drinking water. We also provide staff for that program under a grant from the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship. And I have made it very clear to my membership, if you look at drainage law as it's written right now, the word environment is not mentioned. Drainage laws are written for one purpose, and that is to move water from one place to another after we've had too much of it. And, I don't think when the statutes were put in place back 100, 125 years ago that really the concern about the environment was reflected in those statutes. And I've made it very clear to our membership, and I think people understand that we cannot continue to do business that way, that we have to be part of the solution as opposed to part of the problem. And if we can do things, at the legislative level or the regulatory level that shows that, then we're happy to look at those kinds of things. So I've brought some literature for you. The membership is based upon the number of acres that you have actively drained, and we charge 2 cents an acre. So, my tagline is that for 2 pennies, you can become members of IDDA. The last numbers I looked at for Story County, that'd be about $2,500. Mutual Protection Fund is half that, and again, that's a voluntary fund for $1,250, which is our legal defense fund. So we hope that you all will take a look at this and make a decision that you can become participants in the organization, and I'd be happy to open it up and respond to any questions.
Well, first of all, we do appreciate you coming. As you know, or probably as well aware, that there are opportunities now that counties are continually taking a look at in terms of how to deal with an archaic structure and laws that were put in place over 125 years ago. And a lot of that today has to do with the way in which individual landowners are assessed for the repairs that has to be done, where you have to bring things back to, by code, the original, use of that land. And Story County, for whatever reason, the previous supervisors chose not to participate. I'm not going to question, you know, that because I wasn't basically here. We do know that we are, as a county, attempting to be more proactive in terms of cleaning out and making sure that we have a maintenance schedule to mitigate potential damage to a lot of our drainage districts, mm-hmm. particularly whether they're county-owned tile or private tile. However, the private ones, obviously, the local landowners are responsible for, as you well know. But this past year, through Representative Deal, we do know that there was an attempt to bring this to consideration in the legislature. And it was our understanding, whether it was right or wrong, that we didn't necessarily have the support of the IDDA in this endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
And that was disappointing if that was the case. Now, maybe there were some reasons why your association chose not to get involved in that. So I just mentioned that as a point of information. So this board, while, you know, our purpose today is not to give you a definitive answer one way or the other, but we want to explore, you know, what your association is all about, what advantages it might have if Story County is a member. I do recall before these two came on board, when the Calhoun County case came up, we were asked to contribute. All
through
counties
ISAC.
Were asked to contribute through. It was a voluntary request, which is the way it should have been. We chose not to contribute at that point in time, and a lot of it has to do with there are many issues that occur within individual counties that oftentimes if we had to go and ask every county to kick in whenever there was a lawsuit or litigation, you could see how problematic that would be for a lot of counties. So we have to kind of pick and choose where we're going to join in. There have been some situations, either through the Iowa Engineers Association or others, that we probably have decided that it would be best interest to kick in some dollars. So just by not joining that was not a lack of support or endorsement for Calhoun County or the association. But I do think it's important to acknowledge that this is a topic that counties will be discussing. It's going to be a topic, I think, of great concern, and it will be a concern for me in terms of how we can work with your organization in the future. I'm currently vice chair of the supervisors affiliate, and hopefully, depending on circumstances, could be president next year of the supervisors affiliate. Drainage is going to be an issue, along with several others, that I believe supervisors need to really take a close look at. Whether or not your agency will be one that we want to reach out with will obviously be determined by the membership. But I do appreciate the fact that you indicated 26 counties of the 99 are actively involved. But a lot of that has to do where many of them have drainage areas. There are some parts of the state that have little or none. So that may have something to do with the number. I do know, working with our engineer and our drainage clerk, that we have substantial number of issues in Story County. And I think this will be something that we will take a real close look at and make a decision whether or not we want to join. It wasn't something budget for this year. So I do appreciate you being here. There may be other questions. Paul gets tab to do a lot of things on behalf of the board, and he graciously becomes a point of contact on some of these. So if there's other information that we'll need, we will reach out to you, and if we so decide to consider whether we will either join this year or the following year, this will be something on our radar.
If I could make a couple of points. First of all, the assessment to support Calhoun County was not an IDDA assessment. That was through ISAC. We just used our existing mutual protection dollars to fund that action. We didn't ask any counties to fund
that. Oh, yes, I know, but okay. On that, yes.
All right. Secondly, with respect to drainage counties, I think our overall potential membership is about 36 counties that have organized drainage districts out of the 99.
Okay.
Secondly, with the legislative issue this year, I was approached with respect to possibly looking at a change in how assessments are done with respect to an issue in Story County. I met with the legislature you mentioned about that issue. And basically what we came down to, and the bill never made it into draft form, but basically what we came down to is the fact that if you look at 125-year history of drainage law, the one thing that has been consistent throughout the history of drainage law is that costs are assessed back based on benefit received. And that is the whole underpinning of drainage law. The more benefit you receive as determined by the people that determine that, the more benefit you receive.
100 years ago.
Well, not you. If you're doing something new, you get a reclassification.
If you want to spend the money to get the reclassification.
Right.
It's really interesting to me that that on the one hand, if we go out and do a repair in one of our drainage districts and that repair costs $50,000, it's not billed equally to the people receiving benefit. It's billed based on the perceived benefit that they got when the drainage district was established,
right,
be it 1910 or 1920.
Right.
And yet you charge your membership dues based on a straight, as I understood it, 2 cents per acre,
right,
based on a straight distribution if you're in the drainage district, not based on benefit. So that was interesting to me. It's something that's pretty important to me because while I completely agree with you that we've got 125 years of legal precedent undermining all this, that doesn't necessarily make it right and it doesn't necessarily make it applicable today. And I would hope that if we were going to be part of a drainage district association, we would be part of that association. I'm really encouraged what you talked about in the need to insert environmental concerns into what you do. I would also say that very realistically, it could be time to look at where we were 125 years ago,
yep,
when large swaths of land were owned by one farmer. Now things are getting cut up into smaller and smaller,
right,
parcels. And it just makes sense to me that we could look at that. The one question that I had related directly to this, the $2,500 estimate that you think the dues would be for Story County and then another $1,250 if we were to be part of that pool, does that come out of the general fund, or is that charged back to the drainage districts?
Counties do it in different ways, and they do it both ways, frankly.
It's appropriate for it to be charged back to the drainage districts?
Counties do that. They charge it back to the drainage districts. There have some counties that have actually set up software programs to do that. Some counties just take it out of the fund, general fund. Some counties take it out of the rural services fund. Some counties take it out of their board of supervisors budget. It's done in a variety of different ways, all of which have stood up to audit. It's specifically allowed in the code. So
that helps us as far as from a budgetary perspective if it can be charged back to the drainage district.
Yes.
Great. Thank you.
I know Clay County is probably a really good example of a county that does that.
Yeah. I have a good contact with the supervisors there, so yeah, you bet. Yeah.
I just find it interesting. Rick and I have been on the board about the same time, and I think probably to date the most contentious meeting we ever had was a drainage district meeting.
Not surprising.
We've had two or three pretty good sized public hearings, and the overall comment that we get is, why can't everybody in the district be assessed the same amount? And that's
per acre,
instead of the perceived benefit. And that's the frustrating part, is that when you have to sit here and tell people, well, you know, the law was written at the turn of the last century, and there's apparently at this point there's no interest in revisiting it. I think it's like a 125-year-old drainage tile. If you dig it up and mess with it, the whole thing is going to collapse. So nobody wants to touch it. So, but I appreciate you coming down
Absolutely.
Today And I think it'll be a conversation that we'll have to have with our engineer and our drainage clerk to see if this is something that we want.
And I'll leave this information here. Like I said, I have a copy of our newsletter, a copy of our legislative information, and a copy of our annual meeting agenda from last December. So
okay.
Please contact me if you have any questions.
You bet. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. And have a safe trip back. Okay, you can just leave it over there. Okay, then moving back up then to additional items, I believe, Shelley, is that looks like where we should be then at this point. Okay, under additional items, the first item is a bid opening for a grading and HMA paving on 590th Avenue from U.S. Highway 30 North, Darren Moon, County Engineer.
Hi, Darren.
Good morning.
Okay.
All right, it appears we have one bid. You have the bid tabs in front of you with Manatz is the one bidder, so I will check the bid bond. Bid bond is attached. And this first bidder is Manatz Incorporated out of Brooklyn, Iowa. Their total bid amount is $191,516.10. That's 191,516.10.
Pretty close, didn't you?
That.
Pretty close to our estimate. We will double-check these numbers. Being there's no board meeting next week, probably come back later in this board meeting after we check the numbers to go ahead and award.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Darren.
All right. Mm-hmm. Okay, we will wait to hear back from Darren a little bit later before the close of this meeting. Okay, the next item is discussion and consideration of Story County Conservation Board Resolution 2012-02 on the location of confined animal feeding operations in the proximity of the county parks. First of all, I do not know if anyone from the Conservation Board or the director planned to speak, but Michael, you are here, I believe. Where is he? Oh, you're hiding back there. Let me just, why don't you come up, Mike? Just there may be a question or two. Okay. As usual, we always welcome you here. Just a comment or two. As many of you are in the audience, perhaps are aware that this resolution was sparked by a confined operation request, a matrix request, that was going to be located near, within a mile of Hickory Grove Lake and Park. And this was an area that brought a great deal of concern to the Conservation Board and, I would have to say, quite a number of citizens within our community. The Conservation Board, at its meeting, had roughly between 75 and 80 citizens there addressing their concern. An overwhelming number of folks voiced strong opposition about the siting of this particular confinement with it, as close to the operation as possible. Dr. Jim Pease, the chair of the Conservation Board, working with members of the Conservation, I'm sure, put together a resolution that was discussed at length that evening. The resolution was unanimously adopted, and it was brought forth in a public meeting before the Board of Supervisors, along with other comments from other citizens regarding that particular operation. And at that time, I mentioned that I wanted to bring this back at a later date for discussion and possible consideration from the board regarding this particular resolution, because the resolution, in my way of looking at it, didn't specifically ask the Board of Supervisors basically to adopt or support the same resolution, but it did talk about stating a firm opposition to the placement of confined feeding operations near parks due to potential harm. And I just wanted to know, Board, if with Mike's presence here, are there, I understand there have been some positive discussions, at least, or there have been some discussions with you and with others regarding the impact of having hog confinements near impaired bodies of water and so forth. While the resolution itself is something that is forwarded to the DNR along with any other comments that we receive from local citizens, not to go and rehash the entire situation of that particular location, but Mike, could you just comment a little bit about the resolution itself and the, I guess I thought it was extremely well thought out. It also talked primarily about recognizing the role of agriculture and producers to still be able to function, but at the same time it raised some real important environmental issues that we as a county and as well as citizens almost anywhere would want to have addressed. So any comments that you'd like to make regarding this proposal at this time? I should have told you I was probably going to ask you that question ahead of time, but I'm sorry I didn't do that.
Well, that's okay. I do think it was a well-thought-out resolution drafted by the chair. And you notice that it doesn't specify proximity, nearness. We've had that discussion in the past. It just wasn't, we didn't feel it applicable to, I guess, say, a specific distance from county parks. You know, I think the board clearly recognizes that, as Wayne said, agriculture is very important, is obviously critical, and so we need to find ways that we can elicit that support agriculture as well as in the process of doing so make sure that that our public resources aren't damaged in that course. And that's really the genesis of this resolution, is that the board feels that when CAFOs would affect public resources, that those operations should not be supported if they would negatively impact county parks. And so, you know, I think that through the public process, Wayne, as you said, there has been extensive opposition shown to this particular incident, and that this resolution really does not address any specific operation. It is a general opposition. In relation to, you know, I guess a general question of CAFOs, I think the board just received another manure management plan for one that personally is less than a mile from my house.
Right.
And I'm making no opposition to that, nor is the conservation board.
I was going to point that out if you didn't, because I highly respect that.
you know, there is a place for those, and I think the sighting of that one, if I had to pick a spot in the county not that I want them on all sides of my house, frankly, but as far as from a conservation standpoint, from an environmental standpoint, that's a good spot. There's no impaired water bodies there. There are very little or drainage concerns there, watershed concerns there. and those kinds of things. So when the operations do affect county-owned public recreation lands, natural resource lands, that's when the Conservation Board gets concerned. So I guess with that, I really wasn't prepared to speak to this issue, but if you've got any more specific questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
No, I think your statement pretty much clarifies or at least adds additional comments about the Conservation Board's proposal and recognition of trying to find a way to address the fact of life that hog confinement, CAFOs, is something that is present in our community, how and where they're sited, and what types of regulations that could provide some level of safeguard to the general public, I think is something that most citizens would obviously relish. Now, that in itself creates part of a real major dilemma because under current statutes and standards currently right now, there doesn't seem to be enough teeth in legislation or the enforcement that gives citizens a good feeling that environmental concerns are going to be addressed or have been addressed in the past. And so how we as a county, how we as a state move forward with a discussion regarding the coexistence of a enlarged operation, much different from the traditional 500-head mom-and-pop operations, how as a state we might be able to accommodate them, but at the same time be very much concerned about other environmental and impacts and natural resource impacts, because quality of life is certainly a very important one. And when you talk about economic development opportunities and attracting businesses and so forth into your community, that area of quality of life are parts of one of the big questions that different people are going to have different opinions about, whether someone would want to be located within a proximity of a CAFO operation and so forth. But I do appreciate you being here. It was brought back because I wanted the board to have an opportunity to look at what you guys proposed, have some discussion relative to, is this a type of a resolution that we feel that we could get behind and support, recommend to the DNR that the Board of Supervisors actually firmly support it? Is it something that we would want to tweak a little bit? Is there some language in it that we'd like to see amended or added? Or would the board have something that it would like to present itself in the form of a resolution at a later date? So this is part of that discussion for us to kind of see where we are. And then a little bit later, I'm going to come back and share a few comments that I've had with Margaret James, our environmental specialist, and what I would hope that we might be able to do on a statewide basis through the supervisors of the Iowa Association of Counties. So I'll bring that at a later time. Okay.
And I would applaud that for you to give this its due consideration. Wayne, you mentioned one thing I wanted to say. You mentioned that I did have some conversations with the men's family, and I have, and I found them to be, you know, very approachable, very good to work with. I met with Paul and Kathy and their son Kyle at their place. Very good meeting. And they are concerned about this. They are willing to try to take the measures that I think were discussed at the last meeting to try to mitigate effects. So I would commend their willingness to move forward and to try to, like I said, try to mitigate the effect of that. So I know that through the course of this, there was obviously a lot of strong feelings on both parts, and I just want the board and the public to know that there's no personal feelings, ill will between obviously conservation and the men's family.
Thank you for that added comment. Board, any thoughts, questions, either for Mike or just to the topic in general at this point?
I have lots of thoughts, but I'd love to hear what everybody has to say.
Okay.
and then talk about it some.
Sounds like a good plan. Okay. First of all, let me go with the order in which they are located here. Welcome, Susie Petra. Long time colleague of mine. Well, we didn't work in the same building, but former educator. Okay.
Thank you very much.
My
name is Susie Petra, and I'm a resident of Ames. Had I been prepared, I would have loved to have had a visual of a topographic map of the United States. But barring that, I hope you can visualize what that might look like. On that map are hundreds of thousands of lakes and rivers, streams and creeks. And in all the 50 state landmass, Iowa has the fifth worst polluted, endangered, impaired, polluted water. It's hard for me to find words, really, that can convey to you the depth of my concern. As a child, I went fishing with my brothers and my dad in a lot of these waters, and we ate the fish without hesitancy. But I would be loath to do that today. And that is a very short period of time from my childhood to now. We seem to take for granted the clean water that we need to survive. And I believe it is up to us citizens to give voice to the dire straits of our water resources here in Iowa and specifically Story County. And it is up to you, our elected representatives, to do all you can to help change the trajectory of the state of our water. We and our descendants depend on your stewardship, your leadership, to safeguard the future of our water. Thank you very much, and I hope you will endeavor, and I urge you to do all you can to protect our water. Thank you.
Thank you, Susie. Good. Okay, next, Sue Ravencroft. Hi, welcome.
Hi, my name is Sue Ravencroft. I live in Ames, Iowa. And I'm concerned about this issue, and I see it as an issue of ethics and economics. The big issue in economics is externalities, the costs that are imposed on people who do not get the benefit. In the drainage discussion, I heard the phrase, cost should relate to benefits. And I think CAFOs are a textbook example where the costs do not relate to benefits. The cost of impaired water, the cost of decreased value, the cost of communities being destroyed by CAFOs, the cost of having to live with asthma and respiratory problems caused by CAFOs. The benefits are all situated very narrowly. The costs are spread to the rest of the community. And as you pointed out, Wayne, that can affect economic development as well. So I think that I really hope you pass this resolution. That, to my mind, should be something that you do quite readily and easily. And I hope that you pursue the statewide issue to change the law regarding CAFO in general, because I think the environment has reached the point where we're ready to make big, big changes in how we organize our economics. I just read that for the first time in decades, cities are growing faster than suburbs. Young people are moving to cities. They like that kind of living. So that's a huge change in how the country has grown. And I think we may need to rethink the whole idea that we have to have CAFOs. Can we do it differently? And I hope that the supervisors can get together on a state level and say Iowa is not, despite the well-meaning of all the people involved, is going to consider the cost really, really seriously, because they are far larger than the benefits. Thanks.
Thank you, Sue. Okay, Evan Berger. Okay, welcome back.
Yeah, I realize I'm becoming quite the fixture here, so I'll try and keep it brief.
Up here before.
I just want to make one specific point, and then kind of more general point. And the one specific point is, this resolution is somewhat vague. It doesn't have a distance requirement written into it. It's this idea of nearby public lands. And I think in one way that's good because, it's not just the actual location of the building, of the actual factory farm, that's going to affect water quality, air quality, but also the fields on which the manure will be spread. So even if you move the actual building, several miles away from a public park like Hickory Grove, if the manure is still being spread on those same fields, right up to the water, that's not going to help the issue. It's the same concerns, in my mind, there. So that's the specific point. But also on big picture questions, I'm glad to hear you're thinking more on the state level, how supervisors across the state can work together and kind of think about where we want to see our state going, how agriculture should help Iowa instead of hurting Iowa. And Mr. Sanders, you talked about last meeting. You were talking about maybe it's at some point time to stop for a little bit, or slow down a little bit on and think about what this the direction of agriculture is actually maybe the long term effects it's having on our state. And I think that the key piece to all these discussions we've been having is local control. We need local control so that sites like the one that was discussed at last meeting, north of Nevada, where everyone seemed there's no concerns, not as many people are worried about those maybe can go ahead, whereas concerns where there's lots of neighbors around that are would be directly affected, there's a huge park right next door, those can be taken on a case by case basis as opposed to just being automatically rubber stamped and approved. So I see local control as the key piece to this puzzle, and I hope you all do what you can on a state level.
And I actually have one question before you go, if
sure.
I may.
Yes, you may.
The local control issue is something that I have really, really been wrestling with.
Mm-hmm.
And here's my concern there, and I was hoping maybe you could address it for me, or if we've got other speakers who can address it for me. My fear with local control is, okay, that takes care of Story County. But we just passed two manure management plans today that don't originate in Story County, one in Hardin, one in Hamilton. We're working on Dakins Lake right now, which is, what, Paul, less than a mile from the county line up there. If with the state control system right now, we've got some consistency. We may disagree with what the numbers are. I mean, I know you, at least the first time you spoke, the 2,500 was too many hogs for you. You'd like to see another number. Maybe that's something we can handle at the state level. But my concern is this. If it goes to straight local control, who's to say that a county won't view the dollars as more important than environment, and all of a sudden we end up with a 10,000 hog operation immediately across the border in some other county in our watershed that's going to more greatly impact us than any of this ever would.
Mm-hmm.
Help me through that with this idea of local control. It seems to me that you almost create a system where there's more opportunity for abuse rather than more opportunity for control.
Mm-hmm. Well, are you just talking about these manure management plans, the updated ones that were on the...
I'm talking about if you go where there are 99 different decision-making
right.
bodies rather than mm-hmm. one, don't you open yourself up for at least as many problems as you hope to solve?
Right. Well, I mean, what in an ideal world, what I'd like to see is some sort of baseline state-level regulation where every operation has to be examined, inspected on a regular basis to make sure all these baseline regulations are being followed. Big environmental problems, everything's being maintained and things like that. But where the question of siting is at the local level, so where these things are placed, and then once they're placed, then the state would have a role in coming in and making sure that they're being operated properly, that there aren't huge problems. So It's the question of when one's about to be built that I want to see coming down to the local level, and that's my personal opinion. I, I don't know if that
makes more sense to me, because as I read through this, I was reading it as restore local control to every decision that we've got with any one of these, and that creates at least as many concerns for me as
rightly so. Yeah,
just talking about placement. Yeah, I can see that.
Right.
Thank you.
Anything for any other
question? Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you. Thank you. Are there any other comments from members of the audience? These were the only ones that had, was handed in prior to that.
Which one?
No, this is from Margaret. This was. This, I believe this was Margaret. This was what Margaret answered my question that I was asking regarding did we have any knowledge of the location of the two that was on the consent agenda? And as obviously impaired waterways was something that has triggered all of the discussion that we are dealing with now.
Got one more, Wayne.
Oh, yes. Okay. Please, sorry, state your name. And
hi, my name is Brenda Barton, and I'm from Ames.
Okay.
And,
Brenda what?
Brenda Barton.
Right.
And I became involved when I became concerned about the proposed place by Hickory Farm. And it's been a real education, and I'm just grateful that we have this forum. And one of the things that I had learned is, you know, well, go to the County Conservation Board. Well, they can't really do anything except a resolution. And then go to the Board of Supervisors. Well, they can't really, they don't have teeth, what you were talking about. And so I do believe that it does need to come back to local control and our voices being heard and your elected officials. And I am grateful that you are speaking in this way. And in support, I would like opposition to factory farms in Story County, actually.
Yeah, I've actually heard that from now three of our, well, Evan, I'm putting you in this category. Three of our speakers, I believe, as I understand it, what we're talking about is we're talking about proximity and impact to county parks and waterways in Story County. Even Mike Cox sat there and said, you know, the one that's a mile from your house, while you'd probably prefer it to not be there, it makes sense in Story County that if we're going to have something like that, it goes there. What I've heard is that we've had three people, Sue, I believe I would count you as one, who are here speaking against CAFOs in all forms, regardless of where they are because of the impact they have. And what I understand that we're talking about today as part of this resolution passed by conservation is their relationship to our waterways and our county parks. And so I think it's two different conversations. I'm not trying to diminish one or the other. I just think we're having the conversation today about waterways and county parks. And so I wanted to thank you, but I also wanted to point that out.
I'll just follow up with that. I think I've printed off every email that I know that I've received, and I've got them in a file on my desk, and I think there's 22 or 23 emails that we've received from all this, and I'm going to say at least half, if not more than half, are opposed to any type of confined animal or concentrated animal feeding operation. They don't want them. They don't think they should be anywhere in Story County or anywhere in general. So that's I think kind of the message that I've received through the emails that we've. I'm assuming that the three of us have all gotten the same ones.
All right, thank you. In my conversation with Margaret James, who is our environmental health specialist and so forth, that has the dubious task of going out if a confinement operation reaches the threshold that triggers the master matrix, to actually do the scoring from the county standpoint and look at the information that is submitted by the producer or the landowner or the proposed person that is managing the operation. And then with that, we can forward a recommendation from the board from the county's perspective regarding that. I asked and I went back and I pulled out the master matrix. Again, looking at the language, trying to look at the possibility of if this is something that supervisors could take before the state legislature First of all, it would have to be brought through the supervisors, exec board, and then ultimately to the membership for this to become a legislative priority. But I was looking for, are there some things that we could garner from the construction evaluation resolution that we pass every January, which gives the board of supervisors who chooses to join this. And I believe there's all but just a couple counties that have signed this. Not all 99 counties have signed on to the Master Matrix. But in the language of the Master Matrix, it basically does allow for a recommendation to approve or disapprove of the permit regarding the proposed feeding operation. And only those counties that have adopted this evaluation resolution can contest the decisions regarding this. But when it talks about contesting, it doesn't really put any teeth in terms of what we can do other than forward a recommendation. One of my questions is what I was looking for is there a provision? Because if you go down to the next to the last statement, it says, whereas by adopting a construction evaluation resolution, the Board of Supervisors agrees to evaluate every construction permit application for a proposed confinement feeding operation structure received by the Board of Supervisors between February 1st, 2012 and February 31st, 2013, and submit an adopted recommendation regarding the application. And then it goes on to say, whereas the Board of Supervisors must conduct an evaluation of every construction permit application using the Master Matrix. Now, what that means is only if it triggers the Master Matrix would we as a Board of Supervisors have the opportunity to actually weigh in and voice our concern. Now, that is probably not taken in its entire context. The action that we've taken the last couple of weeks does allow, in my opinion, us to forward some information or discussion to the DNR regarding any of the proposed sites that comes on the radar. So, Morgan, I'm going to have to ask you this question. I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but based on previous conversations that we've had, there is no real provision that says that we could forward some opposition or concern because all that came before us was to recognize that we had received a request for manure management. So how do you view these smaller operations in terms of under the current law of our ability to actually say to the DNR that having a hog confinement or CAFO near an impaired water body is something that we do not approve. Do you see that that is really contained in some form that allows us to feel like our voices may be heard?
We currently have no voice under the current regulations on smaller facilities.
And I think that's a very important concept that the citizens need to basically understand. So we have to change the mindset. Now, in my conversation with Margaret, part of my question, and this is just me, it's not anything that I'm not speaking on behalf of the other two members here, but if we are at the local level are to engage in the siting, commenting the siting, such as a placement near an impaired waterway, the question comes down is, can we assist the DNR in seeing if the manure management plans that are submitted are properly adhered to? Currently, right now, they don't have the person power to inspect many of these operations. And so if the county chose to either contract out or provide someone within its jurisdiction, such as environmental health, to review these and then file a report if we find that there is potentially some violation, which there may or may not be, that we would partner with the DNR in such a way that we have another set of eyes and ears saying that we believe that this is something that you need to come up and take a look at, because we can see that it could potentially be harmful to our environment or to our water source. If at the local level we had an opportunity to partner with the DNR in doing something as basic as this, I think that's a step in the right direction. The other question is, as most enforcements, is how do you enforce it? And then if there is a violation, who's to determine what level of fines that would be, you know, addressed to the person? Marga and I, in talking, I think we said, you know, we're talking about scratching the surface, trying to make a start here of getting some things back on the radar and talking about. But this is not going to happen overnight. It's going to be something that may take several months and years before the legislature supervisors weigh in. There are a lot of supervisors that don't want to touch this topic, folks. And here's the reason. Local control. If you elect the supervisors, and if based on some of the letters that we got, their idea of local control is if you vote to place a CAFO anywhere in Story County, we might want to vote you out. Now, because they interpret this as saying individual producers have no rights if a majority of the public or if a substantial number of the public say we don't want it. And so from a constitutional issue, where does the right of the individual producer factor in when it comes to making decisions as they are operating within the spirit of the law? So again, always the question comes down that if you have rules and regulations, there has to be some enforcement or some oversight. And if the powers to be is such that you cannot adequately give oversight, then that's where I think local control would play a very important role in trying to help the DNR and local landlords, because I think the majority of the producers would welcome cooperation in this manner. I could be wrong. But, Margaret, as we were looking at this, and I know you said we're going to talk about this a little bit more and later and try to look at, are there ways that we could look at that? But from your standpoint, when you score the master matrix, a producer can come up with the minimum score possible. And if they fall below that according to the county's scoring, that doesn't mean that that is halted. That the DNR usually will work with the producers within a short period of time and allow them to make some recommendations or some changes and say that this is what they will do. The question that I always have is there any enforcement? Is there ability to inspect and say that they're going to actually do what they say they're going to do when the final permit is actually allowed? Any comments at all? I know this is a lot I'm throwing at you, and but just from your standpoint, because you're right in the middle of it.
Okay. Well, when I receive these master matrices to review, it's obvious to me that they can get the points pretty readily, because of where we're located. There's no karst topography, and we're fairly low-density population, and the alluvial soils. There's some, but not an extreme amount in Story County. So right there, they get their full large base of points that they just have to tweak a little bit to get those. And most of those master matrix applications that we receive are well above the minimum required points. So if you deduct points because you disagree with things, they still come in way above the required points. Not difficult at all, located on the Des Moines Lobe and where we're located here, to get points to get that passed. Now, as far as regulations go, Some of those requirements are built into the permit, so they have to do those things that are in the master matrix. I think DNR tries as best as they can to get those things in place. As far as how often they follow up on that, I do not know. Whether or not the number of animals match the application, that is something that's totally unknown to me, how they determine that, if that's monitored, if they can check their records to see how many they're selling versus what their permit is shows. I don't know what depth DNR goes into. I do know that if we get a complaint from a citizen or if we personally see some problem in the field, if manure is not being contained on the property during times of when they're not distributing it, that that call is made to DNR and they do go field check those. Okay, so there is some kind of activity as far as keeping an eye on these things. Very difficult, though, for the remote sites and for the times, the evening times, when you know when things are going on. I don't know. So there is some involvement with the public and with our department as far as, you know, correcting obvious problems.
Now, not to put you on the spot, but problematic, how problematic would it be if the state would change and allow those counties that wanted to have more of a say in the siting and cooperation with inspection once these things were approved on a county-by-county basis? Do you see this as being very problematic for, say, your department? I know it's tough to put a dollar and cents figure right out right now based on the number that we may have to do, but is it something that would be realistic that we ought to really be talking about trying to consider? Because what I've heard from some supervisors that the cost would be so prohibitive on some of their budgets that they wouldn't feel like that they would be in a position to support that. So unless you had a way to assess someone, either the manufacturer or the producer or the citizens as a whole, how do you pay for the additional inspection that might be necessary?
I know that's a big concern for a lot of counties. We're fortunate that we've got three employees in our environmental health.
That's
There's
right.
some counties that have maybe a half-time person splits out with a weed commissioner. You know, I've got the map here that shows the current CAFOs that we have here in Story County, and I think I count 22 of them. I don't...
Probably more than that.
Yeah, I don't know what kind of a rotation you'd have to put yourself on to inspect these, but even with, three employees, and we don't have a lot. I mean, you go north and west of here, and the counties that are north and west of us have a lot more than we do. That was the comment that Wade and I received at that meeting, that, you know, we get, you know, some counties are getting these one or two a week that show up on their consent agenda. So,
but even taking it up a notch and just, you know, recognizing where the manure management applications are, Matt Corey's been tracking those on GIS, and knowing where they are in the field, and when we're out there on septic and well calls, this is something that we could include in our daily field trips to just be a little more mindful of waterways versus manure application areas, things like that. As far as, you know, the biggest problem with inspections is gaining legal access onto the land of these things, so a lot of it has to be windshield inspections, unless somehow when we tie in with DNR we could gain legal access.
Excellent. Okay. If there are no other comments or questions, let me see. I had one stuck up under here. That was Brenda. Yeah, I got her as soon as I hit. Board, we have before us for consideration here today the resolution that was submitted by the Conservation Board. As a former member of the Conservation Board, now an ex-official member of the Conservation Board, and as a member of the National Association of Counties Environmental, Energy, and Land Use Steering Committee, I think this is protection of our valuable water resources is of utter importance to me, and I believe to you as well. what I would like to know is, could we support the resolution that was adopted by the Conservation Board, or would you be interested in tweaking this in some way or coming up with a separate statement? Or is this something that we would just say, let's let the conservation resolution go as is and move forward? I guess my thought would be to ask us for some possible consideration of support for this resolution.
I'll go first, if you don't mind, Paul.
Vice Chair, go ahead.
Wayne, I think I think you're right in the Conservation Board passing this resolution. I completely support and agree that this is the Conservation Board doing exactly what they're supposed to do. I mean, this is a well-written, well-thought-out resolution, and I believe it's exactly the Conservation Board's place to do something like that. As we're not the Conservation Board, we're the Board of Supervisors. As far as us supporting it, for me to support it, we would have to go in and tweak a few things. I've got five areas that I've got questions or concerns about, and so as I see it, as far as us supporting this resolution as it's written, well, not as it's written. As far as us supporting this resolution, I see three possibilities. I see the possibility that we can go through my concerns and come to some sort of resolution on them. You can convince me that my concerns are unfounded in part or in total, or you can outvote me 2-1 to pass this thing. But for us to take action, for me to take action today, there's some areas in here that I think we need to talk about.
Go ahead, Paul.
I'm probably going to come down on the same side that it sounds like Rick is, but we're two separate boards, and I applaud the job that Dr. Pease did when he put this resolution together, and I think it was the right thing to do for the Conservation Board to adopt this resolution. For me, sitting on this board, I think we'll have to make some changes. I think the statement that I struggle with that they don't want any feeding operations located near any public parks, and the thing I struggle with is where do you come down on who's got more right to the land in question? Is it the people that come out and enjoy Hickory Grove Park, or is it the family that makes their living off the ground that happens to be close to that county park? It's, you know, if we adopted this resolution the way it stands now, it would simply say to the landowners that own land close to a county park that wanted to do some sort of this operation, it would simply say, we're sorry that your land happens to abut a county park. But the Board of Supervisors in Story County isn't going to support your right to put up this feeding operation. And we had this discussion when this plan was originally on our agenda that we've all said it before, every single thing that the Menz family did, they did in accordance to the regulations that are laid out by the DNR. And by us adopting this resolution the way it reads now, we're simply saying, too bad, you're too close to a county park.
Well, and I just reiterate, this is a good Story County family that is caught by location as much as anything. And it has really been, I know it's beat up the Menz family pretty good going through all this. It's been unfortunate that they've been caught in the middle of what I think is a very real issue, and that is protecting, for us, Hickory Grove Park. I mean, I think that's a real issue and a real concern. And I applaud those who have brought forward concerns, but it has been really unfortunate to me that the Menz family has been caught in the middle of this, because I do believe they're a good, long-standing family in Story County, and I feel for them.
Let me draw your attention back to the paragraph, the last paragraph in question. it says, or next to the last paragraph, it says, therefore, we wish to express to our fellow Story County citizens, to the Story County Board of Supervisors, to the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, to our legislators, and to the governor, our firm opposition to placement of confined feeding operations near our parks due to the potential harm to our parks and to our citizens through loss of park use. Now, I know the term near was a term that sometimes we struggle with. How far away are we really talking about? I believe the discussion that came from conservation was it's each situation needs to be viewed on its own merit, and the number and size and location and as far as the spreading and so forth. And so they didn't want to lock in at that point in time of a definition of how many actual feet that needed to be there. But what I see this statement doing is just simply saying that the Board of Supervisors joined the Conservation Board in stating that we firmly oppose placing CAFOs near parks and other recreational sources. And when I use the word park, I'm also talking about water resources. So I'm not seeing it as literally, maybe as you all may do, because the bottom line is the conservation budget comes from the general fund. We rely on revenue from the users of that park. And I believe last couple weeks ago, there was a substantial revenue that comes into this county because of the users of the park. And so if that is diminished because people choose not to come because of the location of some of these confinements near, then how do we maintain the viability of our parks for future use and for future generations? So I struggle with how to recognize the role of the individual producers and also recognize the concern for the public good, the general welfare of all. And in my struggle, what I'm concerned about is that I think it's a reasonable compromise. And one of the compromises may be something as simple as saying, okay, if you have identified that we're going to spread manure along these particular parcels of the land, but over here down within this proximity, this is very close to the watershed, there's much more problematic that spill and runoff could impair water sources. So we would agree that no spreading would occur in this location. To me, that would be a reasonable compromise that could be worked out between the producers and the conservation people, like we do in other environmental issues that we talk about building buffers and doing other types of things. Folks in Story County have stepped up to the plate time and time again to join conservation in easements and land preservations, not only for their own property, but for future generations. So I see this as a good faith gesture on our part, and I don't see it as us coming down with a hammer saying that every confinement that comes in may be denied. It's simply saying that if you look at its location within the proximity of one of our major resources, such as parks or bodies of water, that we would prefer, we would be opposed to it being placed there. I think that statement in itself gives the DNR a understanding that the county also sees an economic impact of loss of revenue as well as the economic gain that the citizens would have. And so while I'm not saying that we should not consider their right for to improve themselves and expand their operation, but we also have to come up with a way to work cooperatively with them. So I guess I'm...
Well, let's deal with that one. That's one of my concerns. I heard Paul say that line, and so I'm starting with our firm opposition to the placement of confined feeding operations near our parks. Let's just deal with that line, because Wayne, what I'm hearing you say and the way I read this are two different things. Our firm opposition, that is an absolute position. We are going to oppose this if it's near one of our county parks. Okay, so then if we are absolutely going to oppose it, you better define near for me. And if you can't define near for me, then in my mind, we don't have firm opposition. What I heard you say is we need to look at this on a case-by-case basis, and we need to make sure that it doesn't negatively impact our parks. And so what I'm suggesting for that one line is you either take care of it for me by defining what near is. If we're going to firmly oppose it, if it's near, you better tell me how far away near is. And if we're not, if we're going to look at it, if we're concerned about it, then you put that in there instead of our firm opposition. We are gravely concerned about anything located near our parks. We want to be able to weigh in on anything located near our parks. Then, to me, you've got a little more of a buffer where you're saying, hey, we want to look at all this. This is something that really bothers us. But when it's firm opposition without a clearly defined just how far is near? Those two, to me, don't work together. So that was one of my concerns. If we can find a way to address that, you'll have me on board with that one. But I have trouble reconciling the, okay, we're absolutely going to oppose anything near, and I don't know what near is.
And I understand that. And I think many of us struggle with that concept. And we can arbitrarily decide as a board and with the cooperation of the conservation what we would determine near to be, and let that be our baseline, and say that anything outside of that we're probably not going to be opposed to, but if it falls within that baseline distance, we do have firm opposition. That, I mean, while I guess I'm looking for a compromise here.
Yeah,
I'm looking
absolutely.
For a way for us to be able to firmly state that we have a real concern about the potential harm to one of our flagship parks if something is allowed to go in within, and I'm going to use the term a mile, because that appears to be a reasonable, at least that was the triggering point for this one. Now, is the mile the right figure? I don't know. Should it be a mile and a half? I don't know.
Depends on where it is. I mean,
right,
for me, it depends
right.
on where it is.
But I do think that I can certainly understand where you're coming from, where your reluctance from. I mean, I had the same question. I asked this question to the Conservation Board that night. They chose not to address the term near. Mike may come up again, I suppose, to kind of convey the struggle that they have
sure.
dealing with this.
Well, then I'm going to suggest another possible alternative. Leave the word near there, and instead of firm opposition to, put extreme concern in. So instead of it reads right now, our firm opposition to the placement of, and it would go to our extreme concern in the placement of confined feeding operations near our county parks. We are, you said it right then, we are extremely concerned about this. I think that is completely legitimate to say. I'm not willing to say that we firmly oppose it in all cases, especially when we don't know if we're talking about a mile or a mile and a half. Is it a trait circle? Does it depend on which way the wind blows? Does it depend on how water flows? Because I think all of those are factors in what near means, but I'm still extremely concerned if it's anywhere close.
I would also like to see, in a resolution that I would support, I would like to see something in there that the county... We can voice our extreme concern, and we can also take the county can also take the step to work with the producer to try to find a location that can be. And I think that's somewhat what we've tried to do here with the Men's Family, is to try to come up with, you know, where is the best location going to be. Then, you know, I think I tend to overthink things a little bit. If the Men's Family is forced to move this operation 5 or 8 or 10 miles down the road, they're still going to haul that manure and spread it. And that's where you have the problems. That's where the potential, the biggest potential problem in my mind is when you're hauling that manure great distances, you couldn't fit one of those tanks that they haul that stuff in this room. They're that big. And it does a great deal of damage to the county roads. The engineers can attest to that. You know, there's bridges that aren't going to hold them. And that's when you have, I think, the biggest potential for problem is when you have to haul that manure greater distances to spread it. So if we're forcing the producers further away from the parks with the feeding operation, and you know, I'm not sure if it was the intent of the Conservation Board when they said that the CAFO operation, did that include the area in which the manure is going to be spread, or is it simply the facility itself? So those are the kind of things that I struggle with this.
So let me ask this question, and maybe it's appropriate, maybe it isn't. Would one scenario be that we could recognize the resolution that was supported, adopted by the Conservation Board, however the supervisors would like to recommend or amend, or we would insert, you know, the term voice our extreme concern as mentioned here. So we as a body would insert the concern expressed by this body, but at the same time acknowledge the resolution that was adopted by the Conservation Board, again showing the separation between the two. Mike, could I put you on the spot for a minute? Do you see this? What would that be problematic from your standpoint as the director of the Conservation Board, for us to be able to acknowledge the resolution that, and I hate to use the word knowledge support, because we want to change. I'm hearing that there seems to be a couple people who like to change a little bit of that, while I don't disagree with where they're coming from. But from your standpoint, would that be a reasonable approach that you think the Conservation Board would understand? Or obviously we're going to do our own thing. We're two autonomous groups, you know. But how does that?
Maybe just so I'm clear, Wayne, could you? What is the specifically the change that you're asking about in the resolution?
The term is the firm opposition to these operations near here that we cannot really define. So the interpretation that I'm hearing is say that the term firm opposition is a statement of we obviously oppose the placement of this near our parts, and yet we don't know the definition of near and what this basically may entail because of the other factors as expressed here.
Well, and yes, this was discussed at the Conservation Board meeting. Near is difficult to define, and I think that there are probably those members and maybe some that had intent that near doesn't necessarily have a spatial reference, but an effectual reference. And I think that I believe that was really the intent, is that an operation could be a mile and not have an effect, or it could be 10 miles and have a significant effect. That is the feeling from the board as far as their reluctance to put a spatial reference to near.
And so I agree with what you just said 100%. My problem is that if I vote, and I'm just speaking for me, if I vote to firmly oppose something, I'm firm, I'm opposing it, and I don't define exactly where I'm opposing it, then I don't feel like I'm giving clarity to my colleagues or to the public or anybody else, and so I get concerned there. And that's where I'm suggesting leave the word near. I understand where you're getting the near. You've got that bubble that can expand and contract depending on the impact, and I'm with you. But then you're not firmly opposing anything. You are extremely concerned about it, and which may lead to opposing it. But for me, I can't reconcile the I'm going to firmly oppose it, but I can't really tell you exactly where I'm going to firmly oppose it. And so that's where I'm struggling.
I may just suggest for your discussion point that maybe you look at it from a different lens, and that one option would be to keep a firm opposition and then to maybe not use the word near, but maybe say effect or impact or something to that effect.
Yeah, I thought of that, and I had trouble, Mike, getting to the language, okay, am I going to firmly oppose anything that I think maybe could impact? Am I going to firmly oppose anything when it is shown to impact? I mean, that was the first place I went, was I wanted to replace near. And, yeah, I wanted to replace near, and I couldn't get there. I couldn't find, for me, a suitable replacement for near, which is why I slipped up to the firm opposition and saying, okay, I'm opposed to something that is shown to negatively impact our waterways. I don't have a way to say that, or a clear way to say that. And so, again, I am counting on, if we pass some kind of resolution here, I'm counting on this board living by whatever we pass. And so I just want to make sure that it clearly lays out, the next time we have one of these, we go right back to the resolution and we say, we said this, we said this, we said this. All right, that's where this leads us. And again, I completely support what you and the Conservation Board put together and Dr. Pease put together here for the Conservation Board. I think we have a different role in all this, and I want to make sure we get really clear on where it ends up.
Well, for me, at this point, I would be more comfortable with this board acknowledging the resolution passed by the Conservation Board. And instead of trying to sit here today and hack this one to pieces and insert and delete, if we acknowledge this resolution today as it stands from the Conservation Board, and then one of us or all of us come up with our own resolution and put one together that as a Board of Supervisors we think we can get past. Because I think, I mean, I've got so many questions about this. Is the Conservation Commission, are they concerned about, I know they're concerned about the odor. If it's a mile away from the campground, I know you're concerned about the odor. Is it the amount of manure that's going to be applied to the ground? Is it the potential for spills? And I still have conversations with people that view the manure as an unwanted byproduct from these operations, and that is just not the case. I've had conversations with one or two fairly large farmers here in the county that have considered putting up this same type of operation simply for the byproduct, so they can apply that manure to their ground and not have to purchase chemical fertilizers, and it's a way to reduce their input costs. So I would think that the odor is probably the biggest concern from the use of the park standpoint. Is there the potential for a spill? I mean, we've all read about, you know, the spills that they've had. And then I come right back around to, you know, if there's a potential from a spill from one of these units, then the DNR needs to be involved, and these things need to be regulated, and they need to be inspected and checked. And then if they're going to do that, the DNR needs to, or the state needs to step up and fund the DNR so they can do these things adequately.
So one of the concerns, or if I heard you correctly, you're saying that we could acknowledge the resolution as submitted by the Conservation Board, and then we could take some time and draft our own resolution with the language that we thought would be fitting our support, which would gain the majority support of the Board of Supervisors. I guess we don't necessarily need to be unanimous, but we'd have to have the support. And then move forward in that manner. I guess before then, I want to come back with a statement before we decide on that. But would that be something that would be reasonable assumption for us based on the discussion that we've had so far, that it sounds like rather than trying to wordsmith this, and I believe you said there may be another area there that we probably ought to focus on that would probably be worthwhile for us to place this on an agenda, which obviously in this case the earliest probably would be after the week of the 23rd, because we're not meeting next week, and then so whether it's this next couple of weeks or the following, we'll just have to pick a time where we all are here for that.
I'm in support of what Paul's suggesting. It's actually five areas, Wayne, that I have concerns with, and to that end, I would suggest that if we go down this path, let me draft something I would be comfortable with, and then you guys take a look at it and see where you come down on it. And I would like to. Have I got this in Word? Did you send this to me in Word, or do I just
have it? I have a copy.
Have that in Word.
We have it.
Yeah, because I'd like to start with this, and then and work what I'd like to work for you guys to see kind of where my concerns are and how my wording would be different. But I support the idea. Like I say, I support the Conservation Board's action here. And so if we were to move to acknowledge it, I would be in support of that. And I like the idea of us being clear on where we are. So I like the idea of the Board of Supervisors having a resolution of their own. I'm just not comfortable just moving on with this resolution.
Okay. Well, thank you. I think it sounds clear that it would be in our best interest to not to take any action as far as a resolution of the Board of Supervisors ourselves, but to go ahead and try to acknowledge what has been submitted by the Conservation Board. But prior to us voting on that and moving forward, as I indicated earlier, I think just for the record, in 2 weeks, I will be attending the National Association of Counties, NACO, which is in Pittsburgh, and I am a member. I am the only member representing the state of Iowa on the Environmental, Energy, and Land Use Steering Committee. And when you look at resolutions that are adopted on the national level, obviously none of them speak directly towards CAFOs and confinement. But they do talk about land use, they do talk about water resources and clean water acts and many of these other types of things and nitrates and other types of things. But this one statement in the resolution I think really gets to part of what I think is appropriate for cities and counties to look at. And I'd just like to read you just a part of what is one of the things that we will be voting on. And it's under land use, and it says that NACO recognizes land use planning and growth are central to our social and economic stability. How we use our land directly affects our ability to accommodate development, to protect valuable natural resources, minimize pollution, preserve the cultural and historical character of our community, conserve energy, provide community facilities and services, and maintain a high quality of life for current and future residents. And then it goes on to say, development principles should include providing reasonable protection for the integrity and health of our natural resources, enhancement for economic vitality of a region, and environmental protection as reasonably necessary for those areas determined critical by peer review and revisit and science. And then it goes on to say, these principles acknowledge the individual rights of our Constitution while protecting protection where necessary for those things of value for all citizens. And I just say that at the national level, this statement is central and core to what we as Iowans also hold as valuable, is looking at land use principles that enhances and protects the environment for sustainability, but also recognizes the rights of individual citizens and so forth. So how you arrive at governing legislation that does both of those things is what we're all about. And so I want to also take this time to both acknowledge and to compliment both of you for what you've shared here today. I wasn't sure where you were coming from in this area. This, again, is part of the process. But I believe that where we are as a county, I think we have more in agreement than what we might have in terms of disagreement on this particular issue. And I believe there is a solution for us as we move forward. And so if you would, one of you would put it in the form of a motion, since there was consideration of us to acknowledge this and to defer any action, where the board will work to come up with a resolution. And Rick, it is appropriate for one of us to draft the proposal. So that is, you know, certainly how we can do that, and I have no problem if Paul wants to yield to you or I yield to Paul, so forth. And one of us need to put something together so that we can go forward with that. So with that, are you interested in putting forth a motion for our consideration at this time?
I'll put forth some motion that the Story County Board of Supervisors acknowledge the Resolution 2012-02 from the Story County Conservation Board.
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded that the Story County Board of Supervisors acknowledges the resolution by the Story County Conservation Board 2012-02. Any further discussion? Okay. With that, all in favor? Now, I think, how was that stated? Just additional items. I don't think it requires a roll call vote. Just got to look at my agenda right quick. It's just an additional item. Okay, so all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, opposed? Motion carries. Now, I'm assuming with this motion and the statement that we've made that we are going to empower each ourselves to come forth with a statement regarding this topic at a time to be determined. So that wasn't a part of the motion, but I'm going to ask.
Do you want to put a timeline on this? I mean, I know how things tend to get away from us, but 30 days. If you feel like you're the one that wants to draft it and have us look it over, I mean, I know that you're going to be gone some.
I mean, we just miss each other now for the rest of the month in terms of all three of us being here for a meeting. So to me, it would be our last meeting in July, is that like the 30th or the 31st? Does that sound right?
24th.
So 24. August 1st is a Tuesday?
Right.
Yeah, so I'd suggest that by August 1st we come back forward with something, because I think that's the next meeting. Huh? July 31st is a Tuesday. Okay. July 31st, I think, is the next meeting that all three of us are going to be here.
Okay.
So I'd suggest that by July 31st agenda, we have a resolution for consideration by the Board of Supervisors addressing this topic.
Okay. So be it. Okay. Thank you. And thank you. Okay. So I believe going back to the agenda now, we are item 3, consider a resolution 1301 approving a 28E agreement between the City of Ames and Story County for the State Street Reconstruction Project. County Engineer Darren Moon, and I also like to acknowledge representative of the City of Ames is here, Tracy, and I can't never remember that other face, and Rudy. We may ask any comments or questions that you may have from you, since this came to us as a request of the City of Ames. Okay, Darren?
I can point out some of the details of the agreement. This is for State Street, just the portion south of Highway 30. It's about 0.7 miles total. About half of that 0.7 miles is under county jurisdiction currently. The agreement uses around 80% of MPO funds. Those are federal aid funds that come to the Ames MPO. The MPO boundary does go outside the city limits, and that's why this project is able to be done with MPO funds. So it's a good thing that some county projects are included in the MPO plan, so I appreciate that. The remaining funds above and beyond the 80% is split 50-50 city and county. So what the board would be committing to by approving this would be adding into our FY14 budget. When we do that this fall, you'd be committing to us putting about $220,000 in our local secondary road construction fund. And currently working with the city on actual plans for the project. We haven't decided what we're going to do on it yet, so it's hard to come up with a real detailed cost estimate. But I'd say, if anything, this $1.5 million is a little bit on the high side, so I would expect it to come in a little less than that.
And so as a reasonable time frame, since the action, if we approve this, sets the stage for our further discussion and a working agreement, and at some point when all the details are there, you would be looking at going out for bid for the actual the work that would have to be done. And then the question comes down to is at the time that it's completed, what type of lag time that we would have, because the one area that was a concern to me was the statement that within 90 days of the completion of the project, the county was expected to pay its portion, and knowing that this had not been budgeted.
Yeah, and those bids weren't going to go out till this winter at the earliest, so we'd be talking spring construction, and then you have 90 days after the completion, and the city approves it. So it'd have to be done by March, about to fall into FY13. I don't see that being possible, so it's going to fall into FY14.
Are there any questions for Tracy from the City of Ames regarding this resolution? This has been forwarded on to the county attorney's office. We've had no comments from him, and I know Doug Merritt from the City of Ames has worked on this with Steve Owens in the past. So, Board, are there any questions or concerns that you may have regarding the county entering into this agreement?
I'd move approval of Resolution 1301.
Second.
It's been moved and second the approval of Resolution 1301. Any further comments? Hearing no further comments, a roll call. Toot.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton. Aye. Resolution 1301 is adopted.
First one of the new year.
Okay. Okay.
Hey. We've still got one more piece of business with Darren, don't we? We still had to do something with the bid opening?
Yes.
And maybe it's not appropriate to do that, but
it is.
I just assume.
Thank you.
We can do it now. I'd appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we checked the numbers and everything checked out, so I would recommend the board allow me to move ahead with sending a contract to Manette's.
For the amount of?
The amount of $191,516.10.
I second Paul's motion.
Missed that, didn't you?
It's been moved and second that we approve the letting of the bid to Manette's for $1,951 and
Would you like it?
$191,516.10.
Right.
And I will roll call, so Toot.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton. Aye. Motion is adopted. Okay. The bid is adopted. Thank you, Darren. Okay. Okay. Now we're moving on. So, and now, the presentation and discussion of the results of the classification and compensation study. We call on our HR specialist, Alyssa Wignall. Come on down.
This is the reason that everybody's really here.
Do you have a look in with you?
I don't have one.
No, I can do this one quickly. I'm going to have to run.
Oh. No. You get a PowerPoint, too?
Oh, great. Well, I spent hours last night reading this. I want you to know.
Yeah. You can't steal it, though.
Mm-hmm. listen, we know who to blame today for going over 12 o'clock, so and it's not you.
You barely said anything today.
Paul? He just ran
go
out.
Go ahead. He just ran out. Yeah. Good.
Well, we'll go ahead and start. I'm going to probably turn everything over to Sharon. This is her presentation.
Okay. Welcome, Sharon.
Thank you very much. Which way does it? Oh, just. Okay. Well,
I can do it.
Getting oriented here. What did you do? You touched. Okay. Great. Well, I want to begin by thanking you for the opportunity to work with Story County and to work with Alyssa in the development of a compensation plan for you. The purpose of the meeting today is to review a draft report. This occurs for two reasons. First of all, I was listening to your schedule and being reminded of our discussion that if we wanted to get to this and keep moving forward, we really needed to be here on July 2nd. And then, of course, the other benefit of doing a draft report is that there may be some comments or some perspectives that you bring forward that you'd like to have documented in this draft report, and we are very happy to add those things. So with that, it's helpful to review the study objectives, and we actually, I think there's a total of six of them. On the first page, we were asked to develop a classification for non-union positions. So it's really to look at and understand the relationship of those positions. We started this process and felt that we would be able to develop the job descriptions simply working off of the work that the county had done, because there had indeed been a great deal of work to define many of the essential functions of these positions. Although as we went forward, we found it helpful to assist in that revising and making sure that all job descriptions have a consistent format. We conducted a total compensation survey of comparable organizations. What that means is we looked not only at information about salary, but collected some benefit information as well. We created a new salary plan and assigned each job class to a pay grade. And we are in the final stages of developing an employee performance review process that will give the county the ability to link pay and performance. And, of course, then down the road to find ways to make the compensation program work off of performance. Today's presentation will focus on the first four objectives. We are going to be coming back on July 17th to do training on the performance review system with employees and supervisors. On objective number six, often people find it helpful to go through a few cycles of performance review. I mean, that's something to sort of gauge in terms of your organization. But it may be one of those things to, just take very deliberate steps forward. So a little bit about the study process. We conducted four orientation sessions for non-union employees back in early November. We used those meetings to talk about the study and also to review the process that we were using and how to complete the position analysis questionnaires. We also had an opportunity to meet with department heads and to learn any concerns or issues that they felt needed to be reviewed as part of this study. We got back a number of position analysis questionnaires, the PAQs, reviewed those and came back and conducted 32 job audits. 42 employees were involved in those audits, and at that point it was a member of our staff, Rebecca Edberg, who was here and doing that work, and she's going to be joining me on July 17th when we're back to do the training. We like to have the job descriptions, a good understanding of that, have those fairly tight at the time that we create and administer a survey. So after we got to a point where we had most of that done, we did go forward with a survey. In all, we prepared and evaluated 84 job descriptions. We took the salary data, which we'll talk about a little bit later, the job evaluation results, and analyzed those to come up with and create the 2012-2013 pay schedule that we'll be talking about, and then the draft report. So that just gives you a synopsis of the process. Whoops. Okay. Sorry about that. Let's start with talking about the current compensation plan. I think it's helpful to think a little bit about where we were. First of all, my notes indicate that the last time that the county did a compensation study was in 1991, and you were working with a similar structure and working to maintain that and keep that as up-to-date as you possibly could. Generally, what we recommend is trying to go through something like this, 5 to 7 years. I mean, you have to gauge it. I don't like to give people precise timetables, but jobs change, so it's important to get out there to look at it, to also understand what's happening in the market. The county has over 100 job classes. We actually, when we were going back and looking at the number of job description documents that we started out with, we were closer to 150. And you had those assigned within 16 pay grades. Pay grades had a spread, and when I talk about spread, I mean from the minimum rate to the maximum rate, ranging anywhere from 35% to 56%. The pay ranges are open. That means that there are not steps, but that the progression is open. The midpoint has generally been regarded as the market rate. One of the things that we noted in the current compensation system is that there has not been a established system for employees to progress through their assigned pay grades. For example, in 2011, all non-union employees received a $1,000 increase. This year, effective on July 1st, people received 2%. So the two different ways of doing that what we would look at and can talk about a little later on is we would encourage you to begin to look at how you can have some regular means of providing progression to people, not just what we think of with a pay range being increased, say 1%, because that's what we see happening around, but something that if it's based on performance, it becomes, there's an adjustment of a range by 1% economically, but there may be something that goes from 2% to 3% or something of that magnitude that recognizes performance. So those are some concepts. They're not presented in the report because, frankly, I think we have to kind of work through where you are now, and certainly ability to pay becomes an issue. But one of the things that it might be important to strive for. A little bit about the compensation survey. We contacted a number of communities. It was approaching 30 communities, counties, cities. We had a few nonprofit agencies in there as well. 13 entities responded to the survey, and you will find those on page 6 of the draft report. Similarly, we were able to find some external sources for data in all instances county. So we had information on positions that we were able to pull from 10 additional county sources. The information that we requested from the people who received the survey included looking at a total of 44 job classes. Now, we did 39, not 40, as am I keeping up? Yes, I'm sort of losing context here when I'm here and what I've got up on the board.
let me back up then. We did a total of 39 non-union job classes requesting information from the people that received the surveys. We had a total of 44 positions that we asked for information on. We had five of those positions as union positions. One of the things that we wanted to be able to do was have a better sense of the entire organization. So we didn't take all union positions, but said if we could sort of peg in a few positions there, it would be helpful in how we establish our line and ultimately how we develop the pay schedule. So we do have those positions that are included. Job evaluation, this is something that we talked about in the orientation sessions, and I think we talked about this with you when we started the project, and that was getting this idea of looking at internal relationships, the fact that across county departments, we want to recognize positions that are similar and comparable, and that should become the basis for how these positions are assigned to pay grades. The factors that we looked at, and this was with every single position, are listed here on the screen. I won't go through each of them, but I would make the point that people sometimes wonder how you go about and evaluate the job because we have so many different functions that jobs provide. Well, the functions, as it turns out, are related to these job evaluation factors, and we're really trying to focus on the job evaluation factors based on that understanding of the functions that are in there. Pay philosophy is important, and pay philosophy is really a policy that the Board of Supervisors establishes. In some of our early discussions, we talked about three very common elements in a pay philosophy. Being competitive with the market, and of course that's important because it's your ability to attract and retain employees. Internal equity, that's about fairness, that employees have some basis for being treated fairly in compensation. And then an interest in linking pay to performance. I've been working with many government organizations that are saying it's important that we move in this direction. There's a lot of public pressure to be in this direction, which means you have to look at how you have a very responsible performance evaluation mechanism so it doesn't come down to being, well, that's just favoritism. And we want to be objective and fair, so it's part of that. Some other items that I think are appropriately part of a pay philosophy. One is to talk about how employees will progress within a pay range. I like open pay ranges because I think that it provides some flexibility, and I like the notion of looking at performance as an indicator for pay. By the same token, one of the things that happens is that sometimes that way of moving through the scale, think of it as maybe getting closer to midpoint. It doesn't always occur. When we work with a step plan, it means every year you're going to be budgeting a particular percent for those people who are performing well to move to the next step. This gives a little bit of flexibility from the step, but at the same point, having some type of progression, I think, is important, and maybe one of the things that we might want to have discussion on or continue to talk about. Ongoing administration is also important. This has been a very interesting time to be working on pay because, quite frankly, all of us know organizations where the pay scales have been held constant. We haven't seen either the movement that's there in the economy or we have had ability to pay issues. And so we've seen many organizations that have not been necessarily going out and doing all of the work here on how to increase the pay schedules to make sure that they're keeping pace with market. One of the things I will share with you is our company does quite a number of these studies, and we really had not done very many, say, from 2009 to 2011. This year, we're doing lots of these, which I think is a suggestion that we may be starting to see some changes, or that people are optimistic and feel that there will be changes and want to make sure that they have pay plans in place. Indeed.
Back to the statement on progression within the pay or interest in linking pay to performance. Is there anywhere out there when you have a performance matrix in place that would say that you would maybe freeze someone's salary during a calendar year if they're not performing at a certain level, and then the others might, because part of performance may mean not everybody's going to get the same amount of increase. Okay, so with that in mind, are there industry standards? Are there groups that will say, well, Joe Blow or Sally Sue, whoever you are, for these reasons and through the evaluation performance, we will not give you a salary increase. We will freeze your pay at this point in time because of these criteria. Do you see that happening anyplace?
Yes, and we have done plans that work like that. Even, I'm a stickler for performance. I would say that even a step plan should have a provision in it that if performance is not being met, that the person does not move to another step. So, I mean, I definitely believe that that's important. What becomes critical, and I think this kind of goes back to the reason why you all decided you'd like to work on the performance review process, is that you have to have a good, credible performance review process that is administered consistently across the organization. It takes time to get to that point because people in departments may have been working off of different kinds of performance reviews or different assumptions. So to come in and to do training to help employees understand that as well as supervisors, I think gets you to that point where you can make those decisions. Now, the other thing that I will tell you in the performance reviews and the work that I've done in it, the expectation generally is that people will do a good job. It isn't that we're going to have, you know, a lot of people who will not be getting increases. But I think that for meeting today, in today's world, meeting the requirements of your job description is generally no easy task. It takes someone who comes to work, they're engaged, and really trying to deliver on the performance goals that have been set out. But just so there's an understanding that you would also work with somebody on a performance improvement plan as well if, for example, there were issues. So maybe it's an increase is delayed until you see significant improvements in performance.
So in working with these entities, we're unique in that we have elected officials that determine the level of performance within their own group, and they primarily don't necessarily work through the HR director or so forth. So how would we factor the way we currently have it now? If we set a certain, say that everybody's going to get a 2% or 1% or whatever, you know, and that's applied countywide, we're doing that, not taking in any performance and not having that adjustments within a pay grade. But in working with elected officials in this evaluation process, trying to get everybody on the same page for consistency is very problematic. And yet it's not unrealistic. We ask for right now under our schedule is that they adopt the county pay plan and philosophy. Assuming they all agree to do so, there's no carrot, there's no stick that says that they must follow that. And so the issue becomes, how do you get an approach where department heads that come under the Board of Supervisors are held to one set of standards and elected officials may tend to deviate from that, and we see a disparity existing? You know, have you encountered any of that?
Yes. Are there easy answers? No. But I think that the piece that we've had here in Story County is to really try to work with everyone and to get the input, whether you're an elected department head or you are an appointed department head, it seems to me that they're still working on behalf of the taxpayers. There's still the budget issues. There's still the sense of fairness that I would hope goes across the organization, irrespective of how one gets to a department head position. I mean, I understand that there are differences. I've worked with some folks before when there have been those differences, but I think it's to sort of emphasize the common interests that department heads have. That's okay. That's a good discussion. It's a good discussion. The last bullet point under ongoing administration that I wanted to mention is maintaining the classification system. Jobs change. Sometimes new jobs are created. And one of the things with ongoing administration is to understand where these jobs should be assigned to pay grades. The job evaluation system that we used is a way to do that. In the future to understand whether or not the aspects of a job have changed to the extent that reclassification being assigned to another pay grade is appropriate, or if you're establishing a new position and saying we're not quite sure where it goes. Those same criteria that we talked about for assessing a job could be the way to look at the grade assignment. All of that work that I'm describing comes down to this graph. Let me tell you a little bit about the graph. This graph on the y-axis, you'll see that there is midpoint salary data, and this is the data that has been pulled from the survey. We don't just take every piece of survey data and include it. We sometimes have outliers that will pull numbers down unrealistically low or push them up unrealistically high, and what we're really trying to do is find where that general market is. So we go through this. If there are questions on any of the data that we have, or we just, you know, don't believe that it's accurate, then we don't use it. So we I think had the 44 positions, we actually used data from 33 positions to create this line. All of that data will be available on a CD so that you have that record. Obviously, a lot more than we can put into a presentation or into a booklet. It would have taken a lot longer to go through that booklet if we had. But anyhow, this the x-axis are the job evaluation points. The points that you see on the line, which is a line of best fit, it's basically a regression analysis. It's trying to make sure that we draw that line so that it is closest to all of these points. And in the world of compensation, this is a great line. We have a factor here of 0.977. 100 is when everything is on the line. So it was to us, we felt very comfortable with this information and being able to develop a salary schedule off of that. So let's talk a little bit about the proposed salary schedule. There are 16 pay grades. As I mentioned earlier, 84 job classes. Now, you may recall, as I was describing what we started with, that you had over 100. I mean, we even saw, you know, more documents than that, and suddenly to 84. And you might say, well, what's happened? Well, one of the things that we're trying to do to look at internal equity is to understand when we have positions that are really system-wide in scope. They might have duties that are a little different given the department that they're in, but the essential functions, if you strip everything else away, are essentially the same. Doing the same kind of work, you might have a different report that you're putting out or a different meeting that, you know, you're working on, but the essential functions are the same. One of the things that helps us to achieve that equity is to place positions into what we call a system-wide job class. So you will see some things that we have done that are system-wide, and that should be recognized that we see those functions being the same across the jobs that are occurring in various departments. 40% spread between the minimum and maximum rates, so that stays the same. Midpoint is market. And then we have on page 11 and 12 of your booklet, and then the people in the audience have been given the sheet that indicates the new job titles, because in some instances those job titles have changed, the grade assignment, and then what we've listed is the minimum rate, the midpoint, and the maximum rate. So if we look at the proposed salary schedule and you're sort of wondering, well, how do people fit into this? I think that's really the next question. We had 110 employees whose salaries, and these are the July 1st, 2012 salaries, are within the new pay grade. So 74% are within a pay grade that we're defining as market. 31% of the employees are below the new pay grade. That's about 21%. 7 employees are above the new pay grade, 5%. So that's sort of the distribution that we found as we were working on this. So what does this mean for implementation? Well, obviously, one of the things that the board did in anticipation of this study was to do a 2% increase. Now, the first thing that we generally look at when we're implementing a pay plan is whether or not everybody is within the pay grade. And let me start with the people that are over the pay grade. We do not recommend that they have their salaries reduced to come back within the pay grade. We just look at it and say, when you are going through and administering this pay plan, you're going to be making adjustments as you see fit, what's happening with the economy, your ability to pay. Eventually, that pay plan catches up. And instead of kind of working with people and saying, no, you know, we're going to give you less, we recommend that you hold it stable. I think that's maybe important to get out there first of all. The next thing that we look at is the cost of increasing salaries to people who are below the minimum, to be able to get them to that minimum rate, because that gets them within the range. When we looked at this information, we found that you have, the 31 positions that are below that, to bring them up is $58,373. And let's create a context for that. Under 1% of payroll. Of your non-union payroll. And so I look at that number, and that's not an astronomical number. It may be something that you weren't thinking of in terms of budget, but when you think of it as less than 1% of your payroll, it's a good number. It says that you have been working all along to try to keep pace with positions. You get to implementation, and the question is it something that you can do in 1 year? And that's definitely the best. I mean, from the standpoint of the employee, the best thing that you could do is if you can go ahead and move forward with that increase. Now, let's say that you need to look at other options. One option would be to, again, still try to work with things in year one, but maybe to split things out so that you do part of an increase now, part of an increase, say, January 1 of 2013. When we talk about doing things like this, we don't say, well, we're gonna split it. Let's say that somebody has they're just 1% away from the minimum, and let's say that somebody else is 10% away from the minimum. We wouldn't say we'll give the person who's 1%, you know, 0.5, and then come back and next year give another 0.5. Generally, what we would say is pick a threshold, and our numbers, we thought about 4% as a means that you would be able to look at, and if you were going to divide it between a year one and a year two, give people up to 4% if they're below the minimum, then the remainder the next year. You've got 12 positions right now that are, it's 4% or less to bring them up to the minimum. And if you talk about 5%, I think it's 15 positions. So you've got quite a few of your positions that 5% or less will bring them to the minimum. If you decided to do this over 2 years, and you used the 4% example, you would split it to about 32,448 the first year. The second year would be close to 26,000. So it gives you a little idea if you feel that you need to do that. I'd encourage you to try to do it all, but budgets are tough. And
Sharon, a year ago, this board, when we took a look at this, and you talk about the difference, rather than giving a flat percentage across the board, that's where the $1,000 factored in a great deal, because we recognize that many of those that were at the lower end, $1,000 would give them a much higher percentage than someone at the higher level. And while I don't think we were necessarily thinking about it in these terms of trying to bring them up closer to the midpoint or where they were, but I believe that concept was adopted simply because we did recognize that we wanted to be able to see a higher percentage of dollars go to some of those who have received a smaller percentage of salary over a number of years. So how would that concept not be advisable if we move forward rather than adopting something like your suggestion on the 1 to 2 year?
The first thing we are trying to do is get everybody on market, which we've defined as that 40% spread. That's what that minimum piece does. So let's talk about the ongoing piece. Ongoing, and this would be as you start looking at your budget for your next fiscal year, we would suggest that you sort of look at what are some of these other counties that we've contacted, for example? What are they planning in the way of increases? What is out there in the local government arena that tells you that this is sort of what's happening with local government salaries? It may be that people are kind of being flat. It may be that they're coming up a little bit. We would say the first thing you do is adjust the range so that you're always moving that range in what you need to do to keep pace with the market. The second piece, then, how you move through that range, comes into play with the performance review. I mean, that's the direction we would be going. So if I am an employee and I am meeting the expectations, I have a job, a review of my performance, and it says I'm meeting everything I need to do, it's good, then I would expect that I would move whatever that adjustment is to the pay scale, economically speaking, plus some amount that says you're performing well and we're going to move you in the pay scale. See, the problem is if you almost have to have both going, because if you don't, people get stuck. And if you think of a step system, let's say you have a step system and it's five steps, and each one is annual. What happens? In 5 years, you make whatever is market. Market in that case is not the midpoint, it's the end of the range. Well, for us, we're saying we want to make sure you get to midpoint. You may be making more than midpoint at something, but what we want to do is really kind of focus on making sure that people can get to midpoint. Well, to do that, we have to have something that is more than that adjustment to the wage scale. And that's one of the harder pieces with the open process, because you it's not enough to just increase it because of what's happening in the labor market. But you have to have people who are performing well get some little bump. So they from where they're sitting, they see themselves as getting closer to midpoint. One of the things that will sometimes happen with the administration of an open pay plan is you've got midpoint, and somebody, if that person is sitting there at 88% of midpoint this year, 4 years later they're going to be at 88% of midpoint. And so they don't feel that sense of growth. What we're trying to do is say, if we want that growth not to be on steps or some kind of annual increment, we want to be able to recognize different levels of performance, then we need to set it up so that you're able to move, get closer to midpoint. That has value to you. You want to retain those people. It kind of all comes together. That's a long answer to your question.
Oh, I understand. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then the last one, I just wanted to come back and talk with the employee performance evaluation process. First of all, I should have said this earlier too, but I'll say it now just in case there are any confusion. Job evaluation is when we look at the job. We're not looking at it with a person in it. We're saying we're trying to assess the value of the functions that are being done. Employee performance is when we are looking at how someone is doing that job, and a large portion of that is how they are fulfilling the employee functions. And for some employees, it will be that I have a particular performance goal. I'm supposed to implement this program, or I am supposed to reduce cost in this area. And so those can also be rolled into the performance review. In this case, what we will be doing is looking at the essential functions of each position will basically be rolled into a performance evaluation form. So whatever those essential functions are, translating gives people the opportunity to have feedback on that. Other performance factors that may be important, that's how you do work. It's not just accomplishing the functions and leaving a trail of people that have been pushed off the path, but it's making sure that some of the values that you have, things that are important, are preserved in the way people do their job. And then the mutually established goals. And as I said, we will be back on the 17th, there's a manual. I don't think at this point we want to start laying out ideas for how to get the percentages worked out and things of that nature. This is quite a lot to bite off right now, but our focus, we would suggest a focus of getting people to the minimum rates, getting the performance evaluation moving, and then looking at some ways when you feel comfortable with the performance evaluation system to start to provide percentage increases based on performance ratings.
Okay. Thank you, Sharon. One thought as we begin to address the performance portion as we move forward, be thinking about in terms of how that is best structured internally within an organization like the county. You know, we've got a human resource director here that works directly with the department heads and so forth, and employment-related issues and so forth. When it comes to actually evaluating and reviewing those performance scores or objectives that are laid out, what I'm wondering is, in different entities, there's probably different ways they could do it. You either have one or two people involved in that process. You have a small evaluation committee involved in that. What is the standards, industry standards, that generally says how you can determine some equity within that system when it comes to actually reviewing? You know, say a department head sends that Rick Sanders is doing just a great job and blah, 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 and we give him this particular score, but yet, you know, when you measure that up and you say, how did we really measure that? Who else is making that determination other than the immediate supervisor? Not saying that any of that's wrong, but what, since this is a new venture for us, I'm trying to see where successful performance measures have put in place. Are there some things that we could look at to say this is a model that we might want to consider?
I think a good starting point for you is to work primarily, the relationship is the supervisor and the employee. Sometimes the supervisor is a person other than a department head in those instances. I strongly believe that the department head has a responsibility for what's happening within his or her department. And I think that there also needs to be a central means of ensuring that an employee in Department A is being treated and their performance is being assessed in a similar manner to the person who's in Department B. There are different ways to do that, I think. First of all, and that's part of the reason for suggesting you go through a few performance review cycles initially, part of it is to become accustomed with this form, to be able to share some of this information. And I think that it's probably helpful for folks with department heads or maybe some of the people who are supervising to, from time to time in this process, be able to meet with the human resources director so that you're able to look at this and able to understand the consistency piece. You know, one thing that always happens in a performance evaluation, we typically will make assessments of an individual because we see them perform a particular task. That may be 10% of what they do, but based on how we see them in that 10% of the task, we make a judgment on their performance. I think that the person who's going to be in the best position to look at that overall performance is indeed the supervisor. Now, with that said, one technique that's very easy to put into place to ensure some consistency is to say, if we're looking at a rating that is, you know, below meeting expectations, it's needs improvement, or it's, you know, not meeting, I think that's something that ought to bump up. I mean, definitely if we're looking at anything where a performance improvement plan is going to be needed, the human resources director has to be pulled into that. That's an absolute. The other thing is, on the other side of it, let's say that somebody is getting the highest rating that's out there. Well, to give integrity to that system, there has to be a sense, again, of the consistency. And so the performance evaluation of those people who are meeting well above that, there should be some parallels. And I've worked with systems before where if somebody is above or somebody is below, that's what sort of pulls it towards at least some review and consultation with human resources.
Well, on behalf of the board and Rick, and through your quick comment, I want to thank you for your effort and what you put forth. And I'm sure that as we move forward in working with Alyssa, that this is going to be a great launching point for the county to really dive more into this. And I think this is has been something that we've had on the radar for many years but just haven't gotten there. And I see that it could be a positive venue for us as we move forward. So, again, thank you and your firm for what you put together, and we look forward to our continual working relationship with you. Rick, I'm sorry I didn't...
Yeah, no, that absolutely. It just seems to me that we've got a couple steps that we're going to need to take, starting with the salary schedule being adopted by us. It would seem to me that we want the final report before we do that. I just want to make sure I'm seeing that accurately. Mm-hmm. And then the second thing I would just like to address is the employees that we have, I think you said 31, that fall below the minimum right now, and the total cost of about $60,000 to bring them up to at least the minimum. It seems to me we've got a non-union payroll of, Lisa, I need you to listen just a second. I got a non-union payroll of about $6 million, correct? We budget for 100% of those positions to be filled 100% of the time. It never, ever happens in that whole $6 million. And it would seem to me that at a minimum, we have $60,000 in savings every year just from open positions. Out of the six, at a minimum, I mean, I'm sure it's much greater than that, but we're talking about, as I see it, pulling roughly $60,000 out of that unused portion that we're talking about in order to bring our employees that are below the minimum up to the minimum as soon as possible. Now, like I say, the first step that I see is we've got to have something more than a draft report in order to take action.
Right.
I just wanted to make sure that I was seeing it accurate.
Right.
Yeah, and on top of that, you did have me... I didn't. You did have me put aside the other half a percent also. at budget time that we talked about. So okay. there are some additional funds there also.
Yeah, and for me, I just want to make sure we commissioned this report. Springstead's done a great job putting together the report to this point. Now we need to be prepared as a board to go ahead and start acting in as soon a feasibly and prudently manner as we possibly can, and not let this thing sit on the back burner at all.
I'm just glad we've finally gotten to this point. I mean, it's something that's long overdue, and as a long-term county employee, I heard that a lot over the last 30 some odd years. So I'm just glad we've finally gotten to this point.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay. So the rest should move along quite quickly, hopefully. Thank you with that. Next on item 11, agency reports. I see none. Departmental reports. I believe planning and development have asked to defer, and that is duly acceptable.
I had a question for Leanne, though.
Oh, you did.
What's with all the huge decals on my table in my office? I can do that really easily.
Okay.
Oh, the outside of the garbage cans. Okay, I got you.
Okay, liaison assignments, anything?
Pass.
Just quickly, Gayle and I did have a meeting yesterday. We will be getting together with the board and Lisa to discuss some ongoing issues with mental health as a result of the directive received from the state about establishing a separate fund for mental health things. That is different than what we've done in the past. So that will be happening in probably within the next later this month. Okay, so with that, we'll move on to public forum number two, comments on items not on the agenda. No one is here to speak. Announcements.
We've got a meeting at 1 in Ames.
I know it. I'm going to roll with you.
Okay.
I'm dropping. Announcements from the supervisors.
Pass.
Chairman.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Meeting adjourned.
Okay. You're all right, Shelley.
I'll be there, and I'll sign all of these when I get back.
Yes. What'd you do to it now?
Oh, I had to have the tires and everything located.
Oh, yeah.
I had to check so you know how to make sure.